Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 740, Update on the Meltdown, Part 6, The Wachovia File. This program is being recorded on April 23rd of the year 2011. This program is going to be focusing on the relationship between the illicit drug trade, in turn, elements of the illicit drug trade that appear to overlap the intelligence community, and the financial institutions, some of which went belly up in the last decade, many of which are shaky and figure to go belly up in the not-too-distant future, many of which have been and others of which will be bailed out by, you and me, folks, the taxpayer, Mr. and Mrs. America, and not all the ships at sea, certainly not GE, and not an awful lot of rich folks, not past a point anyway, a lot of other corporations. But we're going to be taking a look at the relationship between the financial industry and the drug trade, and in the background, the intelligence community. A few things to note here. First of all, we're going to be talking about Wachovia. Large financial institution. It was involved in laundering money for Mexican cartels. This story came out, and ultimately it turned out that the volume of money laundered for the cartels was much larger than what the public had been told. There was just a tiny wrist slap given in connection with this. Ultimately, Wachovia went belly up, not before receiving a great deal of assistance from the Federal Reserve. More about that in For the Record 741. Interestingly, it appears to have gone belly up and began sucking money from the Federal Reserve right after the interdiction of the money from the Mexican cartel. So note, first of all, that the operation we're talking about goes through Wachovia, one of this country's larger financial institutions in its day. It went belly up, and the operations are inextricably linked with the operations that were behind a DC-9 jet that was in the Mexican city of Ciudad del Carmen. It was arrested by, it was waylaid, detained by Mexican authorities with 5.7 tons of cocaine with a street value of $100 million. This was in April of 06. This is the DC-9 bust that Daniel Hopsicker has talked about. And that, in turn, is inextricably linked with the milieu of Huffman Aviation, of the Venice Flying Circus, as Daniel called it. Basically, the organized crime slash intelligence slash drug smuggling milieu through which Mohammed Atta and some of the other hijackers infiltrated. Note also that an investigator who was sorting through the ill-doing of Wachovia's dealings with the Mexican cartels was actively frustrated in his investigation by Wachovia. And again, note that in July of 2007, whether it was because of this investigation and or because of other factors, the money began drying up. The flow of money to Wachovia from the Mexican drug cartels began drying up. And as we'll see in For the Record 741, this is right as the cash flows were drying up for many of the institutions that went belly up following the bursting of the real estate bubble. We're going to be relying for our information on a very good article from the Guardian newspaper, the British Guardian, of April 3rd of 2011. This article is titled, How a Big U.S. Bank Laundered Billions from Mexico's Murderous Drug Gangs. It's subtitled, As the violence spread, billions of dollars of cartel cash began to seep into the global financial system. But a special investigation by The Observer reveals how the increasingly frantic warnings of one London whistleblower were ignored. The article reads in part, now again, note the DC-9 bust here. This is the bust that Daniel Hopsicker has talked about, connected to the milieu he's been investigating in South Florida. On April 10, 2006, a DC-9 jet landed in the port city of Ciudad del Carmen on the Gulf of Mexico as the sun was setting. Mexican soldiers, waiting to intercept it, found 128 cases packed with 5.7 tons of cocaine, with a street value estimated at $100 million. But something else, more important and more far-reaching, was discovered in the paper trail behind the purchase of the plane behind the Sinaloa narco-trafficking cartel. During a 22-month investigation by agents from the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration, the Internal Revenue Service, and others, it emerged that the cocaine smugglers had bought the plane with money that they had laundered through one of the biggest banks in the United States, Wachovia, now part of the giant Wells Fargo. The authorities uncovered billions of dollars in wire transfers, traveler's checks, and cash shipments through Mexican exchanges into Wachovia accounts. Wachovia was put under immediate investigation for failing to maintain an effective anti-money laundering program. Of special significance was that the period concerned began in 2004. Okay, repeating. Of special significance was the period concerned was that the period concerned began in 2004, which coincided with the first escalation of violence along the U.S.-Mexico border that ignited the current drugs war. That's when this particular concatenation gained momentum. Okay, we're going to see when it began losing momentum. Criminal proceedings were brought against Wachovia, though not against any individual, but the case never came to court. In March of 2010, Wachovia settled the biggest action brought under the U.S. Bank Secrecy Act through the U.S. District Court in Miami. Now that the year's deferred prosecution has expired, the bank is in effect in the clear. It paid federal authorities $110 million in forfeiture for allowing transactions later proved to be connected to drug smuggling, and incurred a $50 million fine for failing to monitor cash used to ship 22 tons of cocaine. More shocking and more important, the bank was sanctioned for failing to apply the proper anti-laundering strictures to the transfer of $378.4 billion, a sum equivalent to one-third of Mexico's gross national product, into dollar accounts from so-called casas de cambio, or CDCs in Mexico, currency exchange houses with which the bank did business. This last paragraph again. More shocking and more important, the bank was sanctioned for failing to apply the proper anti-laundering strictures to the transfer of $378.4 billion, a sum equivalent to one-third of Mexico's gross national product, into dollar accounts from so-called casas de cambio, or CDCs in Mexico, currency exchange houses with which the bank did business. So the sum that they were laundering, $378.4 billion, they got fined $160 million, and it was roughly a third of the gross national product of Mexico that they were laundering here. So naturally, when this particular conduit dried up, well, Wachovia was going down. Continuing with this Guardian article from, of course, the London Observer. Wachovia's blatant disregard for our banking laws gave international cocaine cartels a virtual carte blanche to finance their operations, unquote, said Jeffrey Sloman, the federal prosecutor. Yet the total fine was less than 2% of the bank's $12.3 billion profit for 2009. On March 24th of 2010, Wells Fargo stock traded at $30.86, up 1% on the week of the court settlement. The conclusion of the case was only the tip of an iceberg, demonstrating the role of the legal, unquote, banking sector in swilling hundreds of billions of dollars, the blood money from the murderous drug trade in Mexico and other places in the world around their global operations, now bailed out by the taxpayer. And, of course, interrupting briefly, although it's not discussed past a point here, looming in the background of all of this, elements of the intelligence community. Continuing, at the height of the 2008 banking crisis, Antonio Maria Costa, then head of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, said he had evidence to suggest the proceeds from drugs and crime were, quote, the only liquid investment capital, unquote, available to banks on the brink of collapse. Quote, interbank loans were funded by money that originated from the drugs trade, he said, again quoting, there were signs that some banks were rescued that way, unquote. Wachovia was acquired by Wells Fargo during the 2008 crash, just as Wells Fargo became a beneficiary of $25 billion in taxpayers' money. Wachovia's prosecutors were clear, however, that there was no suggestion Wells Fargo had behaved improperly. It had cooperated fully with the investigation. Mexico is the U.S.'s third largest international trading partner, and Wachovia was understandably interested in this volume of legitimate trade. José Luis Marmoleo, who prosecuted those running one of the casas de cambio at the Mexican end, said, quote, Wachovia handled all the transfers. They never reported any as suspicious. That's $378.4 billion in transfers, folks. That's a lot of money. As early as 2004, Wachovia understood the risk. Quote, the bank admitted in the statement of settlement with the federal government, but, quote, despite these warnings, Wachovia remained in the business, unquote. There is, of course, the legitimate use of CDCs as a way into the Hispanic market. In 2005, the World Bank said that Mexico was receiving $8.1 billion in remittances. During research into the Wachovia Mexican case, the Observer obtained documents previously provided to financial regulators. It emerged that the alarm that was ignored came from, among other places, London, as a result of the diligence of one of the most important whistleblowers of our time, a man who, in a series of interviews with the Observer, adds detail to the documents, laying bare the story of how Wachovia was at the center of one of the world's biggest money laundering operations. Martin Woods, a Liverpudlian in his mid-40s, joined the London office of Wachovia Bank in February of 2005 as a senior anti-money laundering officer. He had previously served with the Metropolitan Police Drug Squad. As a detective, he joined the money laundering investigation team of the National Crime Squad, where he worked on the British end of the Bank of New York money laundering scandal in the late 1990s. Woods talks like a police officer in the best sense of the word. Punctilious, exact, with a roguish sense of humor, but moral at the core. He was an ideal appointment for any bank eager to operate a diligent and effective risk management policy against the lucrative scourge of high finance, laundering, knowing or otherwise, the vast proceeds of criminality, tax evasion, and dealing in arms and drugs. Woods had a police officer's eye and a police officer's instincts, not those of a banker. And this influenced not only his methods, but his mentality. Quote, I think that a lot of things matter more than money, and that marks you out in a culture which appears to prevail in many of the banks in the world, he says. Woods was set apart by his modus operandi. His specialty, he explains, was his application of a know-your-client or KYC policing strategy to identify dirty money. KYC is a fundamental approach to anti-money laundering, going after tax evasion or counter-terrorist financing. Who are your clients is the documentation right. Good, responsible banking involved always knowing your customer, and it still does, unquote. When he looked at Wachovia, the first thing Woods noticed was a deficiency in KYC information. And among his first reports to his superiors at the bank's headquarters in Charlotte, North Carolina, were observations on a shortfall in KYC at Wachovia's operation in London, which he set about correcting, while at the same time implementing what was known as an enhanced transaction monitoring program, gathering more information on clients whose money came through the bank's offices in the city in sterling or euros. By August of 2006, Woods had identified a number of suspicious transactions relating to Casas de Cambio customers in Mexico. Primarily, these involved deposits of travelers' checks in euros. They had sequential numbers and deposited larger amounts of money than any innocent traveling person would need, with inadequate or no KYC information on them, and what seemed to a trained eye to be dubious signatures. It was basic work, Wood says. They didn't answer the obvious questions, is the transaction real or does it look synthetic? Does the traveler's check meet the protocols? Is it all there, and if not, why not? Unquote. Woods discussed the matter with Wachovia's global head of anti-money laundering for correspondent banking, who believed the checks could signify tax evasion. He then undertook what banks call a look-back, unquote, at previous transactions, and saw fit to submit a series of SARs, or suspicious activity reports, to the authorities in the UK and his superiors in Charlotte, urging the blocking of named parties and large series of sequentially numbered travelers' checks from Mexico. He issued a number of SARs in 2006, of which 50 related to the Casas de Cambio in Mexico. To his amazement, the response from Wachovia's Miami office, the center for Latin American business, was anything but supportive. He felt it was quite the reverse. As it turned out, however, Woods was on the right track. Wachovia's business in Mexico was coming under closer and closer scrutiny by U.S. federal law enforcement. Wachovia was issued with a number of subpoenas for information on its Mexican operation. Woods has subsequently been informed that Wachovia had 6,000 or 7,000 subpoenas. He says this was, quote, an absurd number. So at what point does someone at the highest level not get the feeling that something is very, very wrong, unquote? In April and May of 2007, Wachovia, as a result of increasing interest and pressure from the U.S. Attorney's Office, began to close its relationship with some of the Casas de Cambio. But rather than launch an internal investigation into Woods' alerts over Mexico, Woods claims Wachovia hung its own money laundering expert out to dry. The records show that during 2007, Woods, quote, continued to submit more SARs related to the Casas de Cambio, unquote. Now, note the following. In July of 2007, all of Wachovia's remaining 10 Mexican Casa de Cambio's clients operating through London suddenly stopped doing so. Later in 2007, after the investigation of Wachovia was reported in the U.S. financial media, the bank decided to end its remaining relationships with the Mexican Casas de Cambio globally. By this time, Wood says, he found his personal situation within the bank untenable, while the bank acted on one level to protect itself from the federal investigation into its shortcomings on another, it rounded on the man who had been among the first to spot them. On June 16, 2007, Woods was told by Wachovia's head of compliance that his latest SAR need not have been filed, that he had no legal requirement to investigate an overseas case, and no right of access to documents held overseas from Britain, even if they were held by Wachovia. Woods' life went into free fall. He went to the hospital with a prolapsed disc, reported sick, and was told by the bank that he had not done so in the appropriate manner, as directed in the employee's handbook. He was off work for 3 weeks, returning in August of 2007 to find a letter from the bank's compliance managing director, which was unrelenting in its tone and words of warning. The letter addressed itself to what the manager called, quote, specific examples of your failure to perform at an acceptable standard, unquote. Woods, at this point on the edge of a breakdown, was put on sick leave by his GP. He was later given psychiatric treatment, enrolled on a stress management course, and put on medication. Late in 2007, Woods attended a function at Scotland Yard where colleagues from the U.S. were being entertained. There, he sought out a representative of the Drug Enforcement Administration and told him about the Casas de Cambio, the SARs, and his employer's reaction to them. The Federal Reserve and officials of the Office of Comptroller of Currency in Washington, D.C., then, quote, spent a lot of time examining the SARs, unquote, that had been sent by Woods to Charlotte from London. They got back in touch with me a while afterwards, and we began to put the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together, says Woods. What they found was, as Costa says, the tip of the iceberg of what was happening to drug money in the banking industry, but at least it was visible, and it had a name, Wachovia. In July of 2005, the DEA, the Criminal Division of the Internal Revenue Service, and the U.S. Attorney's Office in Southern Florida began investigating wire transfers from Mexico to the U.S. They were traced back to correspondent bank accounts held by Casas de Cambio at Wachovia. The CDC accounts were supervised and managed by a business unit of Wachovia in the bank's Miami offices. Through CDC, said the court document, persons in Mexico can use hard currency and wire transfer the value of that currency to U.S. bank accounts to purchase items in the United States or other countries. The nature of the CDC business allows money launderers the opportunity to move drug dollars that are in Mexico into CDCs and ultimately into the U.S. banking system. On numerous occasions, unquote, say the court papers again, quoting, monies were deposited into a CDC by a drug trafficking organization. Using false identities, the CDC then wired that money through its Wachovia correspondent bank accounts for the purchase of airplanes for drug trafficking organizations, unquote. The court settlement of 2010 would detail that, quote, nearly $13 million went through correspondent bank accounts at Wachovia for the purchase of aircraft to be used in the illegal narcotics trade. From these aircraft, more than 20,000 kilograms of cocaine were seized, unquote. All this occurred despite the fact that Wachovia's office was in Miami, designated by the U.S. government as a high-intensity money laundering and related financial crime area, unquote, and a, quote, high-intensity drug trafficking area. Since the drug cartel war began in 2005, Mexico had been designated a high-risk source of money laundering. As early as 2004, the court settlement would read, again quoting, Wachovia understood the risk that was associated with doing business with the Mexican CDTCs. Wachovia was aware of the general industry warnings. As early as July of 2005, Wachovia was aware that other large U.S. banks were exiting the CDC business based on anti-money laundering concerns. Despite these warnings, Wachovia remained in business, unquote. On March 16, 2010, Douglas Edwards, Senior Vice President of Wachovia Bank, put his signature to page 10 of a 25-page settlement in which the bank admitted its role as outlined by the prosecutors. On page 11, he signed again as Senior Vice President of Wells Fargo. The documents show Wachovia providing three services to 22 CDCs in Mexico, wire transfers, a bulk cash service, unquote, and a pouch deposit service, unquote, to accept deposit items drawn on U.S. banks, e.g. checks and traveler's checks, unquote, as spotted to Woods. How do you like those services? Excuse me, interrupting, obviously. When you go to the bank, do they offer you a pouch deposit service? How about a bulk cash service? I mean, I've no doubt that such things are there, but gosh, a pouch deposit service. You deposit this pouch for me, all right? I mean, I can't imagine anything like that would ever get involved in illicit money transferring, can you? No, Anyway, continuing. Quote, for the time period of May 1st, 2004 through May 31st of 2007, Wachovia processed at least $373.6 billion in CDCs, $4.7 billion in bulk cash, a total of more than $378.3 billion, a sum that dwarfs the budgets debated by the U.S. state and U.K. local authorities to provide services to citizens. The document gives a fascinating insight into how the laundering of drug money works. It details how investigators, quote, found readily identifiable evidence of red flags of large-scale money laundering, unquote. There were structured wire transfers, unquote, whereby it was commonplace in the CDC accounts for round number wire transfers to be made on the same day or in close succession by the same wire senders for the same account. Over 2 days, 10 wire transfers by four individuals, quote, went through Wachovia for deposit into an aircraft broker's account. All of the transfers were in round numbers. None of the individuals of business that wired money had any connection or to the aircraft or the entity that allegedly owned the aircraft. The investigation has further revealed that the identities of the individuals who sent the money were false and that the business itself was a shell entity. The plane was subsequently seized with approximately 2,000 kilograms of cocaine on board, unquote. Many of the sequentially numbered traveler's checks of the kind dealt with by Woods contained unusual markings or lacked any legible signature, unquote. Also, many of the CDCs that used Wachovia's bulk cash service sent significantly more cash to Wachovia than what Wachovia had expected. More specifically, many of the CDCs exceeded their monthly activity by at least 50%. Recognizing these red flags, the U.S. Attorney's Office in Miami, the IRS, and the DEA began investigating Wachovia, later joined by FinCEN, one of the U.S. Treasury's agencies to fight money laundering, while the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency carried out a parallel investigation. The violations they found were, says the document, serious and systemic, and allowed certain Wachovia customers to launder millions of dollars of proceeds from the sale of illegal narcotics through Wachovia accounts over an extended time period. The investigation has identified that at least $110 million in drug proceeds were funneled through the CDC accounts held at Wachovia, unquote. The settlement concludes by discussing Wachovia's considerable cooperation and remedial actions, unquote, since the prosecution was initiated after the bank was bought by Wells Fargo. In consideration of Wachovia's remedial actions, unquote, concludes the prosecutor, the United States shall recommend to the court that prosecution of Wachovia on the information file be deferred for a period of 12 months, unquote. But while the federal prosecution proceeded, Woods had remained out in the cold. On Christmas Eve 2008, his lawyers filed tribunal proceedings against Wachovia for bullying and detrimental treatment of a whistleblower. The case was settled in May of 2009, by which time Woods felt as though he was, quote, the most toxic person in the bank, unquote. Wachovia agreed to pay an undisclosed amount in return for which Woods left the bank and said he would not make public the terms of the settlement. After years of tribulation, Woods was finally formally vindicated, though not by Wachovia. A letter arrived from John Dugan, the controller of the currency in Washington, D.C., dated March 19, 2010, 3 days after the settlement in Miami. Dugan said he was writing to personally recognize and express my appreciation for the role you played in the actions brought against Wachovia Bank for violations of the Bank Secrecy Act. Not only did the information that you provided facilitate our investigation, but you demonstrated great personal courage and integrity by speaking up. Without the efforts of individuals like you, actions such as the one taken against Wachovia would not be possible, unquote. The so-called deferred prosecution, unquote, detailed in the Miami document is a form of probation whereby if the bank abides by the law for a year, charges are dropped. So this March, the bank was in the clear. The week that the deferred prosecution expired, a spokeswoman for Wells Fargo said the parent bank had no comment to make on the documentation pertaining to Woods' case or his allegations. She added that there was no comment on Sloman's remarks to the court. A provision in the settlement stipulated Wachovia was not allowed to issue public statements that contradicted it. But the settlement leaves a sour taste in many mouths, and certainly in Woods's. The deferred prosecution is part of this cop-out all round, he says. The regulatory authorities do not have to spend any more time on it, and they don't have to push it as far as a criminal trial. They just issue criminal proceedings and settle. The law enforcement people do what they're supposed to do, but what's the point? All these people dealing with all that money from drug trafficking and murder, and no one goes to jail, unquote. One of the foremost figures in the training of anti-money laundering officers is Robert Mazur, lead infiltrator for U.S. law enforcement of the Colombian Medellin cartel during the epic prosecution and collapse of the BCCI banking business in 1991. Mazur, whose firm Chase & Associates works closely with law enforcement agencies and trains officers for bank anti-money laundering, cast a keen eye over the case against Wachovia. And he says that, quote, the only thing that will make the banks properly vigilant to what is happening is when they hear the rattle of handcuffs in the boardroom, unquote. Mazur said that, again, quoting, a lot of the law enforcement people were disappointed to see a settlement between the administration and Wachovia. But I know there were external circumstances that worked to Wachovia's benefit, not least that the U.S. banking system was on the edge of collapse, unquote. What concerns Mazur is that what law enforcement agencies and politicians hope to achieve against the cartels is limited and falls short of the obvious attack the U.S. could make in its war on drugs, go after the money. We're thinking way too small, Mazur says. I train law enforcement officers, thousands of them every year, and they say to me that if they tried to do half of what I did, they'd be arrested. But I tell them, you got to think big. The headlines you will be reading in 7 years' time will be the result of work you begin now. With BCCI, we had to spend 2 years setting it up, 2 years doing undercover work, and another 2 years getting it to trial. If they want to do something big, like go after the money, that's how long it takes. But, Mazur warns, if you look at the career ladders of law enforcement, there's no incentive to go after the big money. People move every 2 to 3 years. The DEA is focused on drug trafficking rather than money laundering. You get a quicker result that way. They want to get the traffickers and seize their assets, but this is like treating a sick plant by cutting off a few branches. It just grows new ones. Going after the big money is cutting down the plant. It's a harder door to knock on, it's a longer haul, and it won't get you the short-term riches. And that concludes the look into the Wachovia file. This has been For the Record program number 740, being recorded on April 23rd of the year 2011. The entire article will be in the description for the Record program 740. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.